We are continuing our series of Psalms in the summer, and this week we come to Psalm 66, and that's one I know is a favorite of many, and for good reason. It's also one that is difficult to figure out the background information. It's very difficult to determine date of when it would have been composed, not so much the date, but the era. Very difficult to determine who would have written it, or what the occasion is for why it's written. A lot of that is not given to us. So it seems to rehearse freedom, and I think most scholars think this is a deliverance that was given post-exile, perhaps likely during the time when they're rebuilding the walls and the nations around them are oppressing them for this. But we don't know for sure. The speaker is also difficult to determine who exactly is speaking each time, but it seems as though the psalmist individually prayed to the Lord to deliver the nation from something they fell into because of their sin. And the speaker made a vow that if the Lord would deliver, he would sacrifice greatly for the Lord. Well, the Lord delivered. And as he delivered the psalmist in his individual prayer, so he also delivered the nation. So the psalmist is taking occasion. He's probably someone of prominence, given the level of sacrificing he's given at the end. Probably someone who's a leader in the temple in some fashion. He knows the prayer he offered, and he wants the entire congregation to know, here is what the Lord did. He was faithful. He answered our prayer, answered my prayer, but delivered all of us as a result. So let's make his praise glorious. So we learn a great deal from this psalm about how we handle answered prayer from the Lord and how we should respond to him in his grace and mercy. Hear now the word of the Lord, Psalm 66, verse 1. Let the whole earth shout joyfully to God. Sing about the glory of his name. Make his praise glorious. Say to God, how awe-inspiring are your works. Your enemies will cringe before you because of your great strength. The whole earth will worship you and sing praise to you. They will sing praise to your name. Come and see the wonders of God. His acts for humanity are awe-inspiring. He turned the sea into dry land, and then they crossed the river on foot. There we rejoiced in him. He rules forever by his might. He keeps his eye on the nations. The rebellious should not exalt themselves. Bless your God, you peoples. Let the sound of his praise be heard. He keeps us alive and does not allow our feet to slip. For you, God, tested us. You refined us as silver is refined. You lured us into a trap. You placed burdens on our backs. You let men ride over our heads. We went through fire and water, but you brought us out to abundance. I will enter your house with burnt offerings. I will pay you my vows that my lips promised and my mouth spoke during my distress. I will offer to you fattened sheep as burnt offerings with the fragrant smoke of rams. I will sacrifice bulls and goats. Come and listen, all who fear God, and I will tell you what he has done for me. I cried out to him with my mouth, and praise was on my tongue. If I had been aware of malice in my heart, the Lord would not have listened. However, God has listened, and he has paid attention to the sound of my prayer. Blessed be God. He has not turned away my prayer or turned his faithful love from me. The word of the Lord. Okay, kids, all eyes and ears up here, because God loves you, right? He loves to remind you that he loves you. And he also likes to show you ways you can show God that you're thankful that he loves you. So let me ask you a question. Do you like to tell people exciting news? And guess what? You found like a ton of money in the woods. I just found thousands of dollars. Can you believe it? Or guess what? My parents said we're going to Disney World. Or guess what? I won the game. It's always fun to tell people exciting stuff like that, right? Do you guys ever tell anybody this? Guess what? I spent an hour in timeout and God taught me a wonderful lesson. What? You don't say that? I guess you probably don't. But that's kind of what the Bible verses we read about said today. The guy who wrote these verses said he had fallen into sin and so had Israel. And God made them face their sin, and he put them through some difficult punishment. But they learned their lesson, and they turned back to God. And the psalmist asked God, if you please have mercy on us, I will serve you. And he decided to tell everyone, even though we sinned, God did show mercy to us. And I'm excited to tell everyone how awesome God is, that he didn't reject us, but he brought us back and was so kind to us, even though we sinned. So it's important that we tell people what God has done for us. Sometimes you just tell other people from church, right? Guess what? I was sick, and I prayed that God would heal me, and he did. And that encourages other people to realize, yes, God does hear our prayers. So it's good for us to share these good things that God does for us. But sometimes God's going to have you share with people who don't believe in Jesus, right? And then the most important thing we can say is, guess what? God saved me, even though I still do wrong things. Jesus paid for those sins, and I want to tell you that so you can know how wonderful it is to have God be your loving Father, because he'll save anybody who believes in Jesus. Maybe God will use you to have those words with some people, and that's a wonderful gift God gives you. So next time, you remember, you have prayed for something, and you know God has helped you or taught you something important, try telling somebody about it, and that way they can thank God for this too. All right, kids, try to think about that through the rest of the sermon, okay? Thank you for listening. So, as I said, this is a response to a deep and sobering plea to the Lord to have mercy, and if he would deliver, enable me then to serve you and tell people of you, and that's exactly what God has done. And so his deliverance is something that he celebrates with all of God's people because they had all fallen into sin. And his individual prayer seems to be something the Lord used to lift that chastisement and bring them out, as he says, to abundance. So how should we respond to answered prayer? I know often we talk about this. We talk about God's no is an answer and God's waiting is an answer. Those are important things to think through, but that's for a different psalm. Specifically here, we have God answering yes to the request, and it shows us how we should respond when that happens. So first, how should we respond to answered prayer? First, we should reflect on how amazing it is that one so great hears us. We should reflect on how amazing it is that one so great as our God, hears us. An almost verbatim language, if you want to use ditto marks for your notes. Second point, we should reflect on how amazing it is that one so holy hears us. We should reflect on how amazing it is that one so holy hears us. And finally, how do we respond to answered prayer? With joyful worship and proclamation. With joyful worship and proclamation. So, we reflect on the fact that one so amazing, how amazing it is that one so great as God hears us. I think it's safe to say all of us take for granted the access we have to God in prayer. I think the fact that we pray as little as we do and as feebly as we often do, I'm not accusing all of you of never praying with any zeal or that kind of thing, but I think all of us would say, I should pray more, and I should pray more fervently. I've never met anyone who said, no, I'm good there. So allow the Lord to examine your heart there, allow the Word to do its work here. But I think we will be led to pray more often and with more zeal when we are thinking about what it means that I get to do this. One as great, the King of Kings, the maker of everything, bids us, please, come talk. You do not have because you do not ask. Come, approach my throne. I've done incredible things to make this possible. Come and bring your concerns, your cares, and your praise to me. We should realize what incredible honor it is, what an honor it is that we get to do this. And we don't have to jump through a bunch of hoops to keep qualifying. I don't have to reapply and get my license renewed each time I want every year to continue to be able to meet with God. It's given to me once and for all. If you're anything like me, we often will be quick to brag about even seeing a celebrity somewhere, right? I made a fool of myself for a couple of weeks after I saw Michael Phelps in a Starbucks up in Baltimore. It was not incredible. It's like 2 minutes from the pool he used to swim in, okay? Apparently he shows up there all the time. Like, I saw Michael Phelps. Can you believe it? He was right there. I was 5 feet away from him in line. So what, okay? But we're quick to do that. It's an amazing, I felt honored. I was 5 feet away from Michael Phelps. And I think it gets far worse when you have some incident where a famous person seeks you out, right? You will not believe who I heard from. So-and-so is picking my brain for something they're dealing with, whatever it is. Or imagine the social media frenzy that would occur when you receive actual public approval from someone you look up to that's very famous. They're on record saying, this person's all right. I'm so grateful for what they did. Help me out, whatever else. You're going to go nuts about that, right? And the honor we have to approach the throne of God, as you well know, so far exceeds these petty things. But I don't think any of us are in a place where we are really valuing that honor the way we should. No, I'm not saying you should go on social media and say, guess what? I prayed to God and he heard. Like, that would be, I think, a fairly trivial way to deal with such an incredible gift we have. But I think the fact that we are so quick to honor those petty things and rarely ever think about what an honor it is that I get to waltz into the throne room of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, what a privilege that is. And it's not just fame that God has. He's not just the most famous person ever. He is so great because of his power and authority. And we compare that to the power and authority we have. We have nothing. We have nothing to compare to him. And here he is bidding us to come. We will read in a little bit how God calls entire nations a mere drop in a bucket. But he says to you, individually, you, my child who I have adopted, come. Come to me and bring your burdens here. So it is awe-inspiring when we consider how great his power and authority are and then realize he's not just letting me in, he's actually listening. He's actually hearing and caring about the requests I bring before him. I hope when we begin to ponder this, we right away echo the psalmist in Psalm 8. What is man that you are mindful of him? Here you are, the eternal, all-powerful God, and you aren't just tolerating me. You're mindful. You care about me. It's one thing when earthly authorities might pay attention to you because they need your vote, right? They only have authority because all of us have said, yeah, we agree they have it. So when they need your backing, that makes sense that they're going to pay you some attention perhaps, maybe do a favor for you or your business so that you guys are favorable towards them. But when obviously, God needs nothing from us. He doesn't need any backing in order to have his authority. And yet he's more mindful of us than any politician seeking backing ever would be in today's world. So these are things that we don't reflect on often, and we need to reflect on a lot more. What does it mean that I'm telling you to reflect on these things? Don't just rush into a prayer. Think about the fact that I'm getting to talk to Almighty God. And this is incredible that I get to do this. Don't take prayers lightly. Consider what it means that you are talking to the greatest being, the maker of all things, and that you aren't just part of some species he's aware of. He made you and knit you together in your mother's womb, cares about you more than you care about yourself, and bids us come to him because he cares. So we should reflect on the ways the Lord has answered our prayers. Times when you asked for one thing and you're so glad he didn't give it to you because it would have been a disaster, and what he actually gave you was so much better because it actually was what you needed, not just what you wanted. Reflect on times you have seen him answer prayers for that you have uttered for others or that they have expressed to you. And let that awe just continue to grow that God, in all his infinite power, still is down on this level, as John Calvin says, of lisping to us while we're in the crib. That he's that willing to stoop beneath his grandeur to care for people like us. But we shouldn't just consider experience as we reflect on this. We should also reflect on what he reveals about himself in his word. And the psalmist does this. The psalmist is thinking, isn't God's work incredible? And then he goes and says in verse 5, come see the wonders of God. His acts for humanity are awe-inspiring. He turned the sea into dry land, and they crossed the river on foot. There we rejoiced in him. So this is not saying this is a psalm composed right after they walked through the Red Sea. He's going back and reflecting on what God has done in history for his people. I serve a God who did that, who defeated the Egyptians, mocked all their gods in the 10 plagues, and then delivered my people through the Red Sea into the Promised Land. That same God is the one who heard me and delivered me. So let that sink in as we meditate. The same God who delivered Israel in the Red Sea is the same one who has just heard your prayer about whatever it is you offered to him. And when he specifically has done what you've asked, we must praise him and rejoice. But we should also reflect on the fact that it's amazing, this is point two, that one so holy hears us. And this is where the psalmist goes. He goes from God's power and might and awe-inspiring works, and then in verse 7 begins to talk about warning people about sinning against this God. In verse 7, he rules forever by his might. He keeps his eye on the nations. The rebellious should not exalt themselves. Bless our God, you people. Let the sound of his praise be heard. He keeps us alive and does not allow our feet to slip. For you, God, tested us. You refined us as silver is refined. You lured us into a trap. It's not the best translation there. It's more like you hemmed us in. We were doing our thing, and you did not let us get away with it. You hemmed us in. You placed burdens on our backs. You let men ride over our heads. We went through fire and water, but you brought us out to abundance. So clearly he's confessing national sin and his place right there with the people. He would be talking about refining them and allowing these burdens to be placed on them if it wasn't in response to sin. So God's authority and power that we start with here should make us revere his holiness and not take it lightly. I think we can, at least I know, I've laughed at my kids over the years when they have acted like they have authority that they don't have. And it's always, I think, humorous when you have a little two-year-old trying to boss parents around and tell them what's going to happen. I had a niece at one point who came out into the room and just announced, she was probably three. When kids want something, their parents should just do it. We laugh at these things because they have no power, they have no authority, so what they're demanding doesn't really matter, right? But if there is one who possesses not just a lot of power, but possesses all of the power to be had, and possesses all of the authority to be had, then obviously their demands matter. And when that all-powerful God is one who is both holy, meaning perfectly sinless, but also just, meaning he can't let others' sin just be something that he winks at, then his demands really matter. And we see that the psalmist is referencing this back in verse 3. Your enemies will cringe before you because of your great strength. This obviously means that they must conform to his demands, that all must conform to his demands or face death. So why is the psalmist calling calling people to cringe? Well, only because they are enemies. and that's only going to be through sin. Yet, the psalmist who's saying, enemies of God, sinners, had better cringe before him because he's holy and just and powerful. He's describing an event that took place because of Israel's sin. So why is he celebrating now and not cringing like he said all enemies should? It's another reason why he is in such awe and wonder. He's on the other side of this rebellious event, and he's not only living and not cringing, he said God brought them out to abundance. He asked for mercy when he didn't deserve it, and God gave him even more than he could have asked for. So, not only are we nothing in power and authority, but we are sinners, i.e. traitors before the great King of all kings. And so God reminds us how we need to view ourselves, particularly when we are entitling ourselves to sin. He reminds us often, wait a minute, you're the two-year-old with no power. You don't get to give yourself a right to go do whatever you want. And Isaiah 40, I referenced earlier, God is bringing a message of salvation to Israel and they aren't listening. And they're saying, God can't save us, God doesn't care, and he puts them in their place. In verse 13 of Isaiah 40, God says, who has directed the Spirit of the Lord, or who gave him counsel? Who did he consult? Who gave him understanding and taught him the paths of justice? Who taught him knowledge and showed him the way of understanding? Look, the nations are like a drop in a bucket. They are considered as a speck of dust on the scales. He lifts up the islands like fine dust. Lebanon's cedars are not enough for fuel, or its animals enough for a burnt offering. All the nations are as nothing before him. They are considered by him as empty nothingness. With whom will you compare God? It's a reminder we all need on a regular basis. Entire nations are a drop in a bucket. And he's talking about all the famous cedars of Lebanon aren't enough for fuel. Fuel for what? Fuel for burnt offerings. What he's saying is, you guys are nothing, and there is no way you could possibly pay for your own sin. Can't be done. And yet, this almighty, holy God has heard the psalmist's cry for mercy and ours. So sinners should be in awe that he hears and receives anything from us. Look at his work we see here with sinful Israel. He clearly doesn't put up with sin. He hemmed them in and he refined them. But instead of rejecting them, he worked with them because they were his people. Worked with them to change them, to refine them from the sin they were chasing after. And in the midst of all this refining process, he hears their cries for mercy. So obviously this fact that not just one so great and powerful hears, but a holy and just God is willing to hear cries of mercy from me, a sinner, should move me to more frequent and zealous prayer. I should value this access I have to the throne even more. So this is something we must reflect on, like the psalmist. He is sitting here dazzled at the fact that a weak, powerless sinner who got himself into a problem because of his sin, nevertheless was heard by God and received mercy from him. And what is his reason? Why was he heard? We see it at the very end of the psalm. Blessed be God. He has not turned away my prayer or turned his faithful love from me. Comes up a lot in the psalms, as you have heard, and it came up a lot in 1 Samuel. But that word, again, faithful, you know where I'm going. It's chesed. It's covenant love. It's not just God's still hanging on here, but man, I hope he stays faithful. No, he made a promise to be faithful, and therefore it can't be broken. That's why the psalmist knows, even though I am hemmed in here because of my sin and the sin of my people, God has said he will hear us. And so, though my circumstances say otherwise, I'm crying out. And now I'm on the other side, and he did exactly as he promised. He did hear me. He hasn't stopped loving me. He also is invoking in the beginning of the psalm promises God made to Abraham. when he says in verse 1, let the whole earth shout joyfully to God. And then in verse 4, the whole earth will worship you and sing praises to you. What's he doing? He's going back to the promises God made to Abraham. The whole world will be blessed through your son someday. And the psalmist is seeing, yep, the faithful love that answered me and gave me mercy when I didn't deserve it is the same faithful love that was promised back then, and it can't fail. So not only am I grateful for this deliverance, I know how big this is going to get someday. God is going to keep all his promises and bless the whole world through what he promised to Abraham. So, as the psalmist has reflected on the incredible access and mercy he received, what is his response? It's our final point. Joyful worship and proclamation. He didn't just like, whew, that was a close one. Glad got me out of that. No. I have to tell people. I have to tell people what God has done so they are glorifying him too. I can't just keep this to myself. And so in verse 13, we see the psalmist say, I will enter your house with burnt offerings. I will pay you my vows that my lips promised and my mouth spoke during my distress. I will offer you fattened sheep as burnt offerings with fragrant smoke, with a fragrant smoke of rams. I will sacrifice bulls with goats. Come and listen, all who fear God, and I will tell what he has done for me. I cried out to him with my mouth, and praise was on my tongue. If I'd been aware of malice in my heart, the Lord would not have listened. However, God has listened. He has paid attention to the sound of my prayer. Blessed be God. He has not turned away my prayer or turned his faithful love from me. So initially, he demonstrates his gratitude by publicly keeping his vows to sacrifice. So what is this offering? It's not a national ceremony, the kind they have detailed in the law, and it's not a payment for sin. It's an individual vow of thanks for rescue and deliverance. It wasn't a vow he was compelled to make. If you ask God for deliverance, you have to go there and make sacrifices. No, this is something he wanted to do because he wanted to praise the Lord. And this is something that God has detailed in his law. So he's not doing a Nadab and Abihu offering God strange fire or anything. I'll do sacrifices God hasn't authored. He loves those. He does not love those. But in Leviticus 22, 21, we see this. When a man presents a fellowship sacrifice to the Lord to fulfill a vow or as a free will offering from the herd or flock, it has to be unblemished to be acceptable. There must be no defect in it. So this is what he is doing. The law has already detailed this, and he wants to thank God publicly by going over and above what he was required to do. And if you look at what he's doing here, we don't have specific numbers, but he's offering fattened sheep, plural, bulls, plural, as well as rams and goats. This sacrifice is astronomical in cost. And some want to dismiss this as just poetic, but he made public vows that he's keeping. So when he said to everyone, I'm going to be doing fattened sheep, bulls, goats, and rams, and he just has a bull, that doesn't really work. What about all the other ones? Oh, I just got a little grandiose. I'm not going to give God that much. No, that's not keeping the vow. So he is offering God an immense sacrifice here. Likely, though he can't prove it, much of this then would have been shared with those he is calling to assemble. So he is praising the Lord for this, but then also wanting to feast together with God's people to reflect on how amazing he is. The fact that it's a burnt offering signifies how sober and deep this joy is that's being expressed. Because he's not just saying, God heard, God heard. God heard me, a sinner embroiled in the effects of my sin. And that's when he heard me and gave me mercy. So I'm not saying I'm awesome and so is God. I'm saying I needed mercy because of sin and he was willing to give it to me. So now he can't wait to tell everybody. And it's interesting how he says, what he says here, I asked for mercy and God did one better. He actually did deliver me and refined me in the process. He actually used the tragedy to help turn me away from sin and be more like him. And then he also lifted whatever the tragedy was. I didn't deserve any of that. But that's the kind of God I serve. And it's the kind of God who does that for all of us, he tells them. And note that this is all about God's glory. It is not about, hey, everyone, come practice the methods I developed here, and you'll get this blessing too. Nothing about what he did that was successful. No prayer of Jabez campaign after this great event that he can go make a buck off of. He even is referencing the fact that he admits he knows he lacked perfection. He says, if I was aware of malice, if I was harboring sin, not actually confessing anything, God wouldn't have done anything. But he did answer. So I know I have malice I was unaware of. I know there's things I wasn't aware of, but God still delivered me. So certainly not pointing to himself in any way. He simply wants to proclaim how awesome our God is, how great his power and authority are, the amazing mercy he shows because he is holy and just, therefore we don't deserve it. And he's calling everyone else around him to respond accordingly. Recognize how awesome our God is, or as the phrase he uses, make his praise glorious. That has been wrongfully often taken to mean all worship needs to be as grandiose and as big a show as possible, and that's not what he's saying at all. God owns all the power. He owns all the authority. He also owns all the glory. You can't make God more glorified. Like, you can't add to his glory. What you're doing is recognizing how glorious he is and responding accordingly. So how often is this your response to answered prayer? Especially when you are realizing you cried out for mercy and he gave it to you. Again, this is not the mercy of salvation, which we should always be telling people about. This is, as a theme we've had in several Psalms, this is asking God to relent from the painful consequences of your sin here now on this side of heaven. How often are we quick to tell people about that so that God is glorified? I got myself into this mess. It was my fault. I was going through the painful consequences. I cried out to God. You won't believe it. He relented. He heard me, even though I didn't deserve it. And I wanted you to know that this is the God we serve. I will put my money where my mouth is. So this past spring, I had not been following the elders' instructions that I need to have somebody in the pulpit every 6 to 8 weeks so I don't burn out. It had been close to 7 months because I had a hard time finding people, so I just thought I would just gut it out. I also stupidly decided I would do all the food for the men's retreat on a weekend when I was actually also going to preach. And maybe some of you reached out to me after that sermon. I was not myself. I was kind of falling apart in the pulpit. And I worked myself into some kind of stress-induced, something akin to chronic fatigue syndrome. I couldn't stand up for more than 10 minutes without having to sit down and fall asleep. And there was a spiritual component, too. As I would sleep, some of the most grotesque images were just constantly plaguing my brain. And it was very frightening. And it's the result of my sin. I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do. I was trusting too much in my own strength, not listening to my elders who cared about me, and thought I could just handle it. And so I asked the elders to please pray for me, and they got together, and following the instruction of James, laid their hands on me, prayed for me, anointed me. God took it all away. He didn't have to, but he did. And I've told some of you that, but I want to tell all of you that. That's the God we serve. I didn't deserve that. Is there a way worse than a few weeks of chronic fatigue, whatever it was? But in the result, even though it was, I got myself into that mess, the Lord still responded to the prayer of our elders and lifted that. And he deserves praise for that. Glorious praise. So when I say how often is it your response to go tell people of how you were shown mercy in the aftermath of your sin, I'm not saying you go and share TMI details. Here's what I got myself into. I'm not saying you have to do that. But we should see from this psalm that it is a blessing to others and a great way to glorify God, to tell of what he's done. And I'm not just saying in response to requests for mercy. Any answered prayer, it does so much to build our faith up and realize, why do I neglect praying when this is the kind of God we serve? He does answer these prayers. So, how do we gain progress in doing this better as we seek to live out the truths we get from these psalms now? We must remember why God ever hears any of our prayers at all. Why has he made a promise of faithful love? What is that faithful love based on? We must first and foremost realize I will be heard because of my faithful high priest and all he has done to secure that access for me. As we hear in Hebrews 4:14, therefore, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast to our confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in every way, as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us approach the throne of grace with boldness, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in time of need. So we're not just heard. God doesn't just hear. Someone's mumbling something down there. What are they saying? No. Approach my throne with confidence because Jesus has made this way for you. I have covered you with his perfection. I can't turn him away, nor can I turn you away. Come and cast your burdens on me. If we don't have that fresh in our mind, we aren't going to have the confidence to pray at all. Or we will not receive the incredible humility that comes from realizing I had no chance. If Jesus didn't do it all for me, I'm still dead. That's a wonderful, humbling kind of confidence. If we don't have that, we're going to misplace our reasons for why I'm allowed in. And we'll make it about things we did. God has to listen to me now. Look how wonderful I have been, whatever it is you want to take credit for. And that can never be your reason for confidence. And it will go away quickly. The devil would love for you to think that's why you're allowed into the throne room, so he can accuse you right out of it. If we aren't aware that all the glory must go to him because it's all about Christ, then we're telling other people about answers prayer, and it's because of what I did. It's about my technique and my method. It's all got to be for the glory of God. So we start there. God's faithful love, his promises are based on the finished work of Christ that can't be undone. There's my access to the throne. So remembering that, how do we make further progress? As we live here in our time, that's not the time of the psalmist, but nevertheless, we still serve the same God. Ask God to remind you of the privilege you have to pray to one so great. We need God to remind us of this. So ask God to remind you of the privilege you have to pray to one so great. But also ask God to remind you of the privilege you have to pray to one who is so holy that he cannot look upon evil, yet he's inviting you into the throne room because of Christ. When God does remind you of these things, don't let them be fleeting. Stop and meditate on them. Contemplate. I get to talk to the one true God anytime I want, and he's always going to listen and not reject me because of my sin. Thank him for Christ, the high priest. Don't just recognize, yes, that's why. Thank him that that's why you can enter. Ask him to fill you with more awe and wonder that he hears you and cares about you. Ask him to move you to tell others of his greatness, again, for his glory, not for attention for you. Don't keep these things to yourself when the Lord provides for you. Encourage your brothers and sisters with it. Don't think, well, they already know God answers. No, it builds up their faith. Encourage each other with the Lord's care and answers to your prayers. And then, when you're realizing he has answered you, be quick to proclaim, alongside with the psalmist, blessed be God. He has not turned away my prayer or turned his faithful love from me.